Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So today is December 12th, 2015, and we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 9, entitled Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Travels to the Holy Places, Text 223. So let's chant responsively. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darshana. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darsana. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darsana. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darsana. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darsana. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darsana. Malaya Parvate Kaila Agastya Vandana. Kanyakumari Tahan Kaila Darsana. Word for word. Malaya Parvate. In the Malaya Hills. Kaila did Agastya Vandana, obeisances to Agastya Muni. Kanyakumari, Tahan, there, Kaila Darsana, visited. Translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went to Malaya Parvata and offered prayers to Agastya Muni. He then visited Kanyakumari, Cape Comorin. So let's read it together. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went to Malaya Parvata and offered prayers to Agastya Muni. He then visited Kanyakumari, Cape Comorin. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The range of mountains in South India beginning at Kerala and extending to Cape Comorin is called Malaya Parvata. Concerning Agastya, there are four opinions. One, there is a temple of Agastya Muni in the village of Agastya Pali in the district of Tanjore. Two, there is a temple of Lord Skanda on a hill known as Shivagiri, and this temple is said to have been established by Agastya Muni. Three, some say that the hill near Cape Comorin known as Patiya served as Agastya Muni's residence. Four, there is a place known as Agastya Malaya, which is a range of hills on both sides of Tamraparni River. Cape Comorin itself is also known as Kanyakumari. The text, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went to Malaya Parvata and offered prayers to Agastya Muni. He then visited Kanyakumari, Cape Comorin. So in this chapter, entitled Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Travels to the Holy Places, I was reminded of the Vaishnav tradition to travel to and live in a holy place. And it's mentioned in the sastras in several different places. More specifically, what came to me was the regular principle mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. And also, given my recent travel to Vrindavan a few weeks ago, I thought it was appropriate to just share my realizations about traveling to and living in for a brief time the Dham, the Holy Dham. And I was thinking, you know, to if someone wanted to practice silence, they would go to a quiet place. So it makes sense to me to practice yoga, we should go to a sacred place. And not everyone may have the privilege to travel to or live in a holy place. But it's my experience in Krishna consciousness that one should endeavor to or hanker to live in or travel to a holy place. And I was thinking, well, why is it that not everyone can live in a holy place? As a neophyte myself, I feel like it's better to live outside the Dham and hanker to live in the Dham than to live in the Dham and hanker to live outside of the Dham. And if you've been to the Holy Dham, inevitably you would have had some experiences where and because people are laughing, I think you sort of know what I mean, but I'll explain it from my own experience. Traveling to India, and particularly the Holy Dham, can be a very purifying experience. At the same time, it's balanced with deep realization of Krishna consciousness. For me, I see purification, it's easier for me to see purification on a gross level. So, for example, many people that travel to India, they have trouble eating because they end up becoming more regular than one would like to be. They, you know, become consumed by dysentery. And my first three trips to India, I didn't get dysentery, so I thought I was somehow special. But this last trip was a little bit challenging, and I lost some weight. And wasn't eating very much for a few days. The first time I went to India, I was consumed by an illness that I had seen many times before, and I also thought I would be immune to it because we live in a first world country. But I was also consumed by this illness known as scabies, and it's more common in children, and especially in schools, it can be passed around quite easily. And being a physician, you know, there's this saying that a person who has a physician, himself for a physician, has a fool for a physician. And so I was in Mayapur. I'd spent a month in Vrindavan, and I traveled to Mayapur with my godbrother. And I got this rash, and I was thinking, this is just something allergic. But I was itching all over for nights, and I thought it was something I was eating. And I asked my godbrother, do you have a rash? No, I don't have a rash. So I was like, all right, well, just take some antihistamines. And then the rash started spreading. And then I was worried that this was something more than that. I asked him, are you getting a rash? He's like, you know, I kind of do have a rash. So I called America, one of my my mentors at the time, and I told him what was going on. And he said, no, it's not scabies. You need to get it between your fingers and all this. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I keep taking the anti-itching medicine. And then a few days, and then it was so bad, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to find the treatment, and we're just going to treat ourselves. So I went to and I was like, great, you know, Mayapur has a pharmacy right inside the temple. So I went there, and they didn't have the recommended treatment. They had sort of like, in America, like the third line treatment, which if you read the risks, one of them is seizures, especially if you're in a warm and humid environment. So I was like, well, I don't really want to cover myself with this. So we found another pharmacy in Navadwip, I mean, which is a very remote place. It's not really near very much. But fortunately, we found the anecdote, and lo and behold, we started getting the rash in between our fingers, and we put this on us. And for a day, you have to leave it on for 12 hours or so. So we spent so much time in gumshoes, and finally it started to going away. And you have to wash all your cloth in hot water or in a dryer. You know, in India you bucket wash your cloth in cold water. So we had to endeavor to find some place to decontaminate all of our cloth. Hence wearing gumshoes for a day. And anyway, it was a very challenging experience. I mean, and the itching went on for months. So I spent the second half of my trip in India, you know, itching profusely. But it gave me deep realization, because when I was having darshan, all I could think about was me. You know, what is this rash? I'm so miserable. I can't stop itching. All I can think about is my body. And every morning I was thinking, you know, when I would see the deities, it was like, I just was like, I'm suffering. And I started to pray to Panchatattva that help me to serve you, help me to like see through all of this suffering so that I can just remember you and serve you. And so I could see that, you know, through the suffering that there's realization. Not to mention that, you know, in India, I feel like, you know, the illnesses we may be consumed by, these are also Rajabasi living entities. So it is more purifying. It's purifying in more ways than one. More recently, I'd circumambulated Govardhan. And for people who live in India, it's normal part of the culture to walk around barefoot. Now, in the last 2 years, only time I've been barefoot is on the tile in my home. But it's sort of special. It's part of the yajna to walk around Govardhan 20 kilometers barefoot. So I've done it a few times. The first time I did it, I wore shoes because I was just, it was like my second time in India, and I just wanted to get any type of infection, and I was so afraid it would ruin my trip that the first time I took off my shoes was at a kund. And within a very short period of time, I stepped right on a thorn and was bleeding all over. So I was like, you know, how could this happen? You know, I was trying to be so careful. And I could just see that there's something special about the Dham. There's something more. It's not just an ordinary place. It's not something that I can mechanically try to mitigate what's coming to me, and the realization that will be a result of that suffering. Just trying to endeavor in the Dham to do anything, or in India in general, can be quite purifying. I mean, to cross the street can be quite dangerous if you've ever seen people in India driving. To purchase anything is a huge endeavor. You can't just go. I mean, you could, but you'd end up paying quite a bit more than maybe 5 times or 10 times as more as something would cost. And just to find anything in India, I've been to Vrindavan a few times, and so I felt like this time when I arrived to the airport, it would be easier. So I got a cab, and I had the address, and I knew I'd been there before in Delhi. I kind of knew the area. Where I got the cab from, yeah, he knows where it is. Okay, you know, it's in, it was in Ananda Bihar. So again, we're driving in the cab, and the cab driver said, when he started asking me, like, how to get there. And it's like 9 o'clock at night. I mean, I said, well, it's in Ananda Bihar. And he's like, well, where? And I said, well, here's the address. He didn't know. So I was thinking, where are we going? And I didn't have my phone connected, so you know, there's no GPS, there's no traffic signals, there's hardly any road signs. Roads don't have names. People just know where things are just by memory. Sort of in the way that in ancient Vedic times, there weren't any written books. Everything was just known, and I feel like it's a leftover from ancient culture. So fortunately, I was able to call someone and get direct, and the driver got directions. But to do anything in the Dham is purifying. It's not simple, particularly for Westerners. This time in Vrindavan, I noticed something also that I hadn't noticed so much the years prior. The monkey population is getting quite much larger. And I feel like Benjamin Franklin has been to the Dham, because he's saying that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure is so true when walking around in Vrindavan and trying to think about the monkeys. You know, rather than have Dham consciousness, it's having monkey consciousness, because the monkeys will... They like prasadam, so if you're anywhere with prasadam, and it could just be fruit, I mean, you could put fruit down for a second to get something in your bag, and the fruit will be gone. You could walk out of a store with some sweet in your hand, and the monkeys will come and take it. You could have your wallet in your hand. You could have the glasses on your face, or a bag in your hand, and they'll take it. And so I saw more and more of this, actually, this trip. And for a while they were transporting the monkeys out of the Dham, but the Brajabasis stopped that because they're Krishna conscious and they can see that this is their home, they're Brajabasis too. So living with the monkeys in Vrindavan, the Brajabasi monkeys, is quite purifying. So with each purification there's some realization that comes. And sometimes realization comes out of Krishna's, you know, direct mercy. I was asked to do some service this trip, and because of my association with a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, you know, by that mercy I was asked to do a service, and only because of that. And I found myself doing the service in Vrindavan, the seva, and it came very strongly to me that, you know, Krishna, why have you asked me to come up here? You know, why have you brought me up here? There must be so many other devotees who are more qualified than me. And you know, I was thinking there must be a specific reason, because I don't have a good reason, but there must be a specific reason. This circumambulation of Govardhan was different than the first few times. The first few times, like I was saying, I was so fixated on just making the long walk and, you know, how I would feel. And this time, you know, because I had done it a few times, I could meditate more on Govardhan Hill, on the pastimes of Govardhan Hill. And so I had an understanding that practice in Krishna consciousness does make perfect. We do make progress. It does happen. Every time I go to the Dham, one of the things I appreciate about not living in the Dham is that every time I go there, it's a little bit easier for me to not see it as an ordinary place, particularly the Brajabasis. I'm always struck by the simplicity of the children and the Brajabasis in the Dham, and how grateful they are, and their smiles, and how happy they seem, and carefree. When you look at the living situation that they're in, they're some of the poorest people on the planet. Taking darshan in Vrindavan during Kartik is very challenging. And it's almost as if I take it for granted here that I can stand in front of the deity and have quiet, peaceful darshan. You know, especially during Kartik, if you don't arrive on time, you may not even be able to see the deity. And if you do arrive on time and you're close enough, then inevitably, you know, if you don't have your feet squarely planted, you could be knocked over. And so it's been somewhat of an internal struggle in the past, trying to have darshan at the same time, trying to, you know, maintain proper manners and in my surroundings. And I had the realization that, you know, someone had said to me, Lalyam, you know, this is greed for Krishna consciousness, this attitude of just kind of, you know, knocking into people. And so I wanted to think that that was, you know, a very high consciousness that, you know, I'm just, you know, I don't live here. This is not my home. I'm a visitor. And so I don't know what people's routines are, and I don't know what people's levels of seniority or spiritual advancement are. I don't know who these people are. And so I should respect everyone. And at the same time, you know, looking at Srila Prabhupada's example, and all of his books, I know that, you know, I spoke about this actually last month, that Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee's Krishna consciousness. And so I should try to follow that example myself. And not try to artificially, you know, be greedy for Krishna consciousness at the expense of those devotees around me. I should try to take care of devotees and respect and appreciate them. And the last realization that I came up with, actually, I wrote something and I want to share that. Essentially that, and it's kind of all the realizations that I've shared, it's sort of, I feel like, the common thread, that it's hard for me to see in America that a devotee is not an ordinary person, or that the temple is not an ordinary place, or that I'm not just some ordinary person. But in Vrindavan, because it's such a purifying place, it's almost hard not to see that it's not an ordinary place. It's not just a bustling city with covered by this, you know, materialism and poverty and filth and poor manners. But that actually underneath there's something very special, and it's always there. We just have to have the consciousness to see it. And similarly, when I come home, it's a little bit easier for me to see that specialness, it's also there in devotees and here in Nuram and Radhi and in myself. So I just want to share this. It's brief, but it sort of is to that point specifically. And actually, what inspired me to have this realization was, it was during Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day. And one of his disciples was sharing his offering. In his disappearance day offering to Srila Prabhupada, a senior disciple asked us not to miss the day-to-day presence of Krishna in our lives. Meditating on this point, I realized that Krishna has very thoughtfully placed devotees in my life at strategic times to win my heart time and time again. I recently walked to Radhakund, and on arriving, I turned down a side street, hoping to find my favorite Tulsi Mala vendor. However, I was surprised to see an old friend, Hari Gopal, walking my way. Hari Gopal, now in saffron, befriended me during my first India trip to Chowpatty, Mumbai, 4 years ago, helping me get acclimated to India and to Krishna consciousness in so many ways. I've been unable to reach him since losing his contact information years ago, and now here he was standing before me at Radhakund. After catching up and exchanging contact information, we continued in opposite directions. But I was soon to turn around as the turn I made leading me to meet Hari Gopal was in fact the wrong direction for me. This is not the first time I changed course for one reason, and it turns out to be for a totally different reason. I consider such instances a practical way to see Krishna more clearly. For example, I first moved to Gainesville in 2007 to do breast cancer research so I could become a surgical oncologist. But later I realized both that I had moved to Gainesville by Krishna's grace to change paths to family medicine, and also, more importantly, to become an aspiring devotee after meeting Krishna House devotees in 2008. These were the real reasons I moved to Gainesville by Krishna's grace. A few years earlier, also in Vrindavan, I was waiting alone. A few days earlier in Vrindavan, I was waiting alone in a large crowd for a yatra bus to take us to Barshana, where Radharani spent her childhood pastimes. I decided to greet an Indian body devotee who was also standing there alone, not knowing that we would spend the next 3 days together like long-lost friends from a foreign land who were reunited. A few days earlier still, I was in Delhi, wondering how I was going to catch a rickshaw, two metros, another rickshaw, and a local 3.5-hour bus ride, and one final rickshaw at the crowded intersection known as Chitikala to get to Vrindavan. If you've ever traveled like this in India, you will understand the challenge, especially traveling with a couple of bags. Before I knew what was happening, a friend had me and my bags at the bus station on the proper bus to Mathura after haggling with the bus driver in Hindi so I didn't have to pay 2 to 5 times as much, which the locals translate to, "I make no profit." Seeing that nothing is ordinary in Vrindavan, I can more easily see that nothing has been ordinary in my life. Krishna has had his hand in it all, whether I am able and willing to see him or not. And my ability to see Krishna's hand in my life is directly proportional to my Krishna consciousness. Visiting the Holy Dham has been indispensable to my Krishna consciousness in at least this one practical way, making it more clear to me just how intimately Krishna has been and is with me at all times. Residing in holy places like Vrindavan or Radhakund is very special. The locals greet you with Hare Krishna or Radhe Radhe. Walking home at night, you can hear the kirtan getting built up in the distance, or a lecture on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emanating from a local temple. I feel an unspoken spiritual bond with the residents of Vrindavan that for sure transcends the bodily platform. What is a transcendental act of love for a devotee is an act of insanity for a karmi. Why inconvenience yourself so much, the karmi might say, at the site of 108 Dandavad Parikram? Govardhan Parikram for most is a 20-kilometer barefoot walk around Giriraj that averages 7 hours. Then there's Dandavad Parikram, where the path is completed one Dandavad after another. Now, if you can believe, 108 Dandavads Parikram is 108 Dandavads in one position, counting using stones and then advancing one body's length to start the 108 count again. This method of worship takes years to complete. After witnessing this feat, never again can I lazily pay my obeisances with just one hand forward. Nothing is ordinary about Govardhan. As I sit at Radhakund, the holiest place in the entire universe, I've been made useful once again, watching two Russian devotees' bags while they take full bath. "Krishna has sent you at the right time. Good luck with your writings," one Russian devotee tells me gratefully. Krishna has so many Russian devotees, it is easy for people to mistake you for one and speak Russian to you. Posing as a devotee of Krishna's devotee, I'm reminded of the greatest devotee of Krishna, in one of Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Instruction purports, Krishna's love for Radha Kund and Srimati Radharani is the same in all respects. Nothing is ordinary about Radha Kund. So I'd like to ask that if you could consider the last time you were in the Holy Dham and think about your promise or your plan to go back to the Holy Dham again, whether it be a year later or 2 years later or 5 years later. And if you've never been to the Holy Dham, I'd like for you to consider your desire to go and experience the Holy Dham. So the essential point is, if one wants to practice silence, he should go to a quiet place. And if one wants to practice yoga, he should go to a sacred place. Well, why is this? Sucho deshe pratishtapya stiram asanam atmanaha nat yudritang nati nicham chaila jina kushotaram tatrai kagrang mana kridva yata chindendriya kriya upavishyasane yunja yogam atma vishudhyaye. To practice yoga, one should get to a secluded place and should lay kushagrash on the ground and then cover it with a deerskin and a soft cloth. The seat should neither be too high nor too low and should be situated in a sacred place. So this is Sucho Deshe. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses, and activities, and fixing the mind on one point, Krishna. I can relate to this verse more and more by associating with devotees who've been to the Dham and traveling to the Dham. One of the things I noticed almost immediately is that chanting japa in Vrindavan is a different, or Mayapur, is a different experience. It's so obvious to me. One of the ways it's obvious is that it's the number of rounds increases, but also the quality of chanting japa increases. And there seems to be less inhibition, less things preventing me, you know, physically and also subtly from chanting quality japa. So from Nectar of Devotion, the 64 regular principles of devotional service, of them, five are very important. Shriya Shri Murtir Sevana, worship the deity with great faith. Bhagavat Shravana, relish the pleasure of reading Srimad Bhagavatam among Vaishnavas. Sarusanga, associate with devotees who are more advanced. Nam Sankirtan, chanting the holy name. And Mathura Vasa, residing in dhams like Mathura and Vrindavan. And then Nectar of Instruction. Karmi bhya parito hare priyataya bhaktim yayur gyaninas tebhyo gyana vimukta bhakti parama premaika nishtastata tebhyasta pashupalas pankajadushas tabhyo pisaradika preshta tadvariyam tadiya sarasi tang nasrayaka kriti. In the sastras, it is said that of all types of fruitive workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent on Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her kund, or lake, is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radha Kund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings? render loving service to the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Astaka Lila, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes. Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radhakund are the most fortunate people in the universe. So, if we don't live in a sacred place, how can we live in a sacred place? Well, for one, we do live in a sacred place. We have Nuraman Reddy, and the temple is a place for us to have Dham consciousness and to manifest that Dham consciousness in our homes. By following those five most important regular principles of Srila Rupa Goswami, we can also manifest the Dham in our homes by worshiping the deity, by regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books, by associating with the Vaishnavas, and by chanting Hare Krishna. We can manifest the Dham in our homes by inviting devotees to our homes and letting devotees take shelter for grihasthas of our homes, sannyasis, and also the community by having bhakti vrikshas at home. And I've also found that in particular for me, it's been a real blessing that I've been able to have the association of a Brajabasi personally while visiting Vrindavan, but also when I'm away from Vrindavan. And I really feel like, in a lot of ways, I don't deserve his continued association, but somehow he keeps giving it to me. And just to have his association and see how he practices Krishna consciousness and the type of person he is it continues to inspire me. And how he's so expert, he's so sweet and loving and attached to Sri Sri Gornitai, and he so expertly engages me in Krishna's service. So I've found that associating with Vaishnavas, but in particular, if one can associate with a Vaishnav who's traveled to the Dham or lives in the Dham, has also helped me to be more conscious of the Dham. And then, like we have 10 offenses to the holy name, there's also 10 offenses to the Dham, which I find are important for chanting japa also, in addition to the 10 offenses to the holy name. To show contempt or disrespect for the guru who reveals Vrindavan Dham. 2, to think that Vrindavan Dham is temporary. 3, to commit violence towards any of the Brajabasi residents or pilgrims, or to think that they are ordinary people. 4, to perform mundane activities while living in Vrindavan. 5, to earn money and making a business of deity worship and Harinam. 6, to think that Vrindavan Dham belongs to a mundane country or province like Uttar Pradesh. To equate Vrindavan Dham with the holy place of the demigods, or to attempt to measure the area of Braj. 7, to commit sinful acts while residing in Vrindavan Dham. 8, to consider Vrindavan Dham and Navadvip to be different. 9, to blaspheme the sastras that glorify Vrindavan Dham. And 10, to be faithless and think that the glories of Vrindavan Dham are imaginary. One of my prayers and something I try to integrate into my daily practice is to try to appreciate and be grateful for the ways in which traveling to the holy Dham and associating with devotees who have traveled there or reading about the Dham has actually changed my Krishna consciousness. And so I'd like to ask that we consider that for those who have visited the Dham, to consider how our Krishna consciousness has changed because of Vrindavan Dham, because Srila Prabhupada introduced us to Vrindavan Dham. Because without Srila Prabhupada, the whole world wouldn't, he really uncovered for us and provided facility for us to very easily experience Sri Vrindavan Dham. And for those who haven't, I'd like to ask that you would consider how your Krishna consciousness may change, should you be able to one day visit Vrindavan Dham, or by associating with those who have experienced and visited Sri Vrindavan Dham. So with that, if there's any questions or comments. Yes, Maharaj.
This is a thank you for an interesting sort of different type of class. This is very nice. Just a little thing to add, because you may have seen me. I think I saw you. You were there just recently in Vrindavan, Sri Vrindavan Dham. And one thing that struck me, maybe it should have struck me a long time ago, but seeing the interactions of the Vrijabhasis, sometimes I would be put off a little bit because sometimes they start yelling at each other in a loud voice, and sometimes I think they're going to start punching each other because I don't understand Hindi, what to speak of, what is it called? Vrijabhas, the local language, or not even Hindi. And so I don't, really doesn't matter what they were fighting about, but the point is, that would, and then this time I suddenly noticed, and it happened several times, they would yell and it would seem like they were almost at the point of violence, and then they would look at each other lovingly and start laughing each time. And it's so different from what I've seen in the West. In the West, it's like the modes of nature, it's passion and ignorance, and people actually do sometimes, you know, end up, you know, with a fist fight or something like that, or even taking out a gun. Whereas, I'm not saying that there are no dacoits or something, there may be some, but in general, the far majority, I was very enlivened to see that they're joking with each other. They're just, it's a way of exchange. It's certain ras or something. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Maharaj.
Maharaj reminded me that this is written about by Prabodhananda Sarasvati in Vrindavan Mahimamrita. He wrote that 500 years ago. He talks about such things, how even the Vrijabhasis will insult you or something. You should still see that. That's one thing that I was thinking when you said that the children there are the poorest. They're not poor. They're the richest. External. What you can see.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice meditation class. I was struggling even while you were speaking because I hadn't been back to Vrindavan for 25 years and I went last year for Pratik. And it was such a shock and a disappointment, and I went through all kinds of grieving because I felt like I had lost the Vrindavan Dham of my youth that I had lived there and loved it there. Then and I was uncertain how many offenses I was committing in my mind and my heart. And then this year, a friend of mine, Krishna Devata, I saw, she did some very active service for the Vrijabhasis, which just in my mind turned everything around. Like if next time I go to the Dham to be able to render some direct service, she went out and found many of the widows and gifted them with beautiful warm shawls, chadars. And she did that as a savior, that she was very inclusive. She is in the yoga world and she had taken donations from different people to do that service. And it was interesting to watch how it unfolded and how many people she engaged in making those offerings and how many of the women that she was serving in a small but very important and loving way, and the kind of loving exchanges that ensued from that. And for me, it was like, oh, okay, that's what I'll do differently next time, is I'll make sure to be in a mindset of service instead of just there to receive the mercy, but let me figure out how to render some humble service. Thank you.
That's very nice. Thank you for sharing your realization.
In Navadvip Dhammahatta, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that how to perceive Dham, that Nityananda Prabhu revealed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime places to Jiva Goswami Pad by the mercy. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, Dhamer upori jaro maya pati jal achchadiya rakhe dham ei chirakal. Sri Krishna Chaitanya jar nahi ka sambandha dhamer upori bas kare sei andha. That it is not possible to buy a ticket and go to some place in India called Holy Dham, and here I am in Holy Dham. Physical proximity is not Holy Dham. It has to be always subordination to a great personality. Even Prabhupada put it in a purport of Bhagavatam, third canto, that Nartan Das Thakur says, Jatra Vaishnava Gan, Seihai Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a place where Vaishnavas are glorifying Krishna by serving. So in that Prabhupada right, in that angle one should always pursue to have darshan of the Holy Dham, where the Vaishnavas, shelter of Vaishnavas are there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave a very heavy, that there are a lot of conditioned soul, they think they have entered in Holy Dham, but they do not have a relationship with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his followers. They only live on the surface of Holy Dham. They never enter into the Holy Dham. So therefore, our main goal is to surrender to a advanced Vaishnava, by their mercy, possible to see Holy Dham as it is. No other way.
Thank you, Brahma Govinda Guru. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi.